Hello and welcome to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast, episode 502. Those of you that are not members of the Facebook group or on my friend list may be unaware that Magic passed away on Monday. He was a rather humongous part of this podcast for 500 odd episodes. You didn't know that, but if you watched the live feed, you would have been seen him sitting in the background, flapping his ears, chewing things, barking at various door knocks, door ring bells, and what Kirby. You want to call it. Well, he shivered at Kirby.
We always have to hear, stop flapping your ears.
Yes, he'd be shivering when Kirby was on for some reason. But it's a big loss to our family, because even though he was a little bit of a pain in the bottom, we all loved him dearly, and he had a massive personality, and he's very, very dearly missed. All we've got of him now is a little box full of ashes, which we haven't quite decided what to do with yet, and a little tiny bottle with some of his fur in it, and lots and lots of happy memories and annoying memories and some millions of pictures. But he was my best friend, and I've now got a little space down to my left, which now has a load of cameras in it, which is the only benefit of him not being sat there, because I'd have to move things out of the way, because he had a tendency to wrap himself up in very important cables, until very recently, when I thought, what I'll do, I'll put a bed down there, and he then curled up in the bed. Sadly, a little bit too late, but yes, we lost Magic, and some people have posted some kind comments on various threads, comments of which are deeply appreciated. And all the comments about Magic and the dogs over the years have been appreciated. And the fact that you lot don't mind the background noises and things like that, including them, brings warmth to my heart. But sadly, no more Magic. He was nearly 14. He would have been 14 next week, so quite an old chap, as the vet said when she murdered him. Anyway, so this week, I better introduce the others. We got her. Yeah, she's back. It's Debbie Melrose.
Clum.
Clum? Is that Clum?
That's my quote. Clum.
It's Kirby Bartlett Sloan.
Bliss.
And Mary Lang.
We forget because we must.
Now, we're on a little bit early this week because England are in the final of the European Championships, and I will be disappearing to watch the build-up in exactly 58 minutes. So, Alexa, tell me when it's 7:30.
Oh, thanks, Adam.
7:30 morning or evening?
Evening.
Alarm set for 7:30 p.m.
Thank you. I just need to go into the other room. Talk amongst yourselves, your podcasters. You should be able to do this, but the alarm's going off in the other room because my COVID test is ready. Just talk amongst yourselves for a bit. You can talk about how wonderful Magic was.
Now what am I supposed to do? Because my tablet, which is right next to the TV, now has an alarm set for 7:30.
No, don't do it. We all need to call them different names.
I have returned, and I can now go live on the podcast to show that I have... live on the podcast to show that I have a negative... negative... COVID
well
test.
Done, Adam. I don't know what Kirby was trying to say over that.
Facebook is being a pain and saying it's having trouble playing the video. Well, that's my fault. Not my fault.
I think everybody's just like, England.
No. Looking at a so, what is this?
What is what? It's a podcast, Barry. I know you've been away for a while, but...
Stop it.
Right, so this week we're going to be looking at Loves and Monsters, and here we go. The episode begins with a chap running through a wastelandy sort of area and arriving at some empty warehouses and finds a TARDIS there, and he's enthralled by this TARDIS, and he sort of goes up, touches it, hears some shouting from within, and then witnesses a rather silly scene in which the Doctor and Rose this. Pardon?
It's Scooby-Doo style, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Chasing this monster, and basically this chap who we find out to be called Elton is doing a bit of a video diary. He's telling his story to the camera, and what we're watching is the story he's telling.
Master.
Yes.
the monster is called a hoax.
Thank you for that. Anyway, so eventually he goes back to the beginning of the story. Well, he tells bits where he's bumped into the doctor, because it's all about his experiences with the doctor throughout his life, and he seems to have a sort of a knack for running into sort of incidences in which the doctor has been involved in. But it's only the 10th doctor and another, and he has an ancient memory from his early childhood of looking up at the doctor, who was looking down at him with a sad face, but he can't remember why.
We don't necessarily know that he only knows of the 10th doctor.
No, there's no mention of any other doctors, and they say his face doesn't change, he doesn't age or anything, so therefore he won't know of the other doctors.
Do they say that? Do they?
Well, when he meets up with the group, he hears about others, but yes. His experience is strictly with the 10th doctor.
That's right. Anyway, then he makes friends with this Moaning Myrtle, who he...
Moaning Myrtle!
Yeah. and they eventually form this little group called Linda.
Yay! Linda!
Bing Linda, did you say?
I said yay.
Yeah, I've lost my bell. I don't know where that's gone. Yeah, so this little group incorporating woman with big nose, quiet bloke, absolutely stunning Bliss, who I was absolutely...
Bliss.
Yeah, she was removed from the cast very early on, and I was gutted because I love Catherine Drysdale. I think she's so brilliant. And she always plays characters like the characters she's playing in this, funny enough. Slightly sort of ditzy sort of characters. Anyway, so they talk about the doctor and then they make a little band and
Kirsty like, says I think so.
Way! Okay, let's see how we go. This is going to be a moment of podcasting history. Well, it's not really, but sorry. Oh wait, I suppose I better do an introduction when she sort of.
I wonder if she remembers that the time changed.
What time? Oh, to 3:30. No, of course she did. She commented. Hello. Oh, she says unavailable. You sure she's available? Because I went. Let's try again, Kirsty. It says she's unavailable. Tell her it says she's unavailable. I'm just doing a second attempt to ring her. Actually, she might actually where I've actually called her. She might be able to sort of join the call. Let's go back to Doctor Who until Kirsty's ready. Right, tell her I've tried calling her twice. Or are you not in conflabs with her?
I am telling her. I said we are underway, trying to call you. You can join the call when ready.
Yeah. Please don't swear, etc.
Goes on Skype, she can click on join the call.
Yes.
So Linda, basically they get together, have these little meetings and talk about all sorts of things other than just the doctor and stuff, science fiction stuff.
Oh, wait a second.
What'd she say?
She said it's 1:37. Did I miss a memo?
Oh, gosh. We're so slick, aren't we?
Well, I'm pretty sure you posted it somewhere. Just say that I doubt she'll doubt that you posted something somewhere, Kirby, because it's a fairly regular thing. So, like I say, they it starts off as a little club in which they talk about the doctor, but they start doing all sorts of other hobby, almost like WI things, like everybody brings a little snack through for a buffet, and then they do like fan fiction sessions, and they get to know each other's sort of inner darker secrets, like the fact the big nose woman's daughter died, which makes it quite well, obviously because later on she dies as well, and I thought that's quite a point.
I thought their daughter just left.
Or just left, did she? Or she died.
What did you say, Mary?
I said, this is a lot like Doctor Who conventions. People make friendships, and people meet and get married. And
and then they have little band sessions and form their own band, a very unlikely looking band. Actually, the way you got Bliss and Ursula with their very, very long hippie-like hair and clothes, it did sort of remind me a little bit of the Mummers and the Puppers. Not the fact the way they sound. Although it didn't sound too bad, considering. And I do love the ELO musical backdrop in this story, by the way, because I love ELO. And then, just as they're having a lot of fun, in walks Peter Kay. I mean, in walks... Oh, is that her? Is she ready?
She says, first of all, I said, yes, we start half an hour early. I posted that just for this week, some sport thing. And then she said, sorry, it's been nuts around here. I'll just pass then. Sorry.
Ah, for God's sake.
And then I said, you can join us at the top of the hour if that helps. And she said, maybe, smiley face.
Why is it? She's such a mystery. Right, let's carry on with this then.
She's being coy.
Yeah, she is. So anyway, Peter Kay, I mean, I can't remember the character's name now. Not the Absorber Loft.
Victor Kennedy. Sort of,
Elton.
Pardon? What?
Elton.
Not. Peter Victor Kay Kennedy. Does not play Elton. Van der Valk plays Elton, or is it the other way around?
Victor Kennedy.
Kennedy.
Is my microphone not working?
No, but when other people talk, it sometimes mutes things. Everybody else talk more. Only joking.
We try.
Yeah. Has she muted herself? Have you muted yourself again?
No.
That's weird.
Master?
Yes.
Next time you go to Cardiff, find this particular antique market, and you can go down to the basement, which is now mostly furniture for sale, and take a look at this particular basement. I thought this was a set. It's actually a real location.
Thank you. Right, anyway, so he quickly takes over this Kennedy. Is it say Kennedy? Is that his name?
Yes, Victor Kennedy.
Yeah, I'll call him Kennedy because I can remember that a bit easier. He's got a stick with a sort of fist on it, like you remarked before, it was like Biff's stick from Back to the Future. So
yes.
I'm going to say that this is a Biff, because if a Loki can be a woman.
Did you see the picture I posted?
Yes. If a Loki can be a woman and a little boy and a crocodile, stroke alligator, then Peter Kay can
spoilers.
Be there's no spoilers there. Only if you know what I'm talking about. Anyway, right, so.
So I've seen it, it's brilliant.
Kennedy is also very, very keen on finding the Doctor, but we don't know at this stage why. So he joins their little group, becomes in charge of them, really, and sets them all little assignments and gets to know them a bit. And then when they start getting a bit rebellious, he decides to eat. Well, they disappear.
He asks them to stay behind, doesn't he? And then it's could you stay
behind for chat? And yeah, so this happens over and over again. And then in the middle of that, we see the scene at the beginning of the story where Elton has his sort of encounter with the Doctor and Rose and the Hweeks, as Kirby points out. But, of course, he gets told off because he doesn't actually make a proper contact with the Doctor. He's sent after finding out about Rose's background.
That's just cruel, that bit.
When he looks out for Rose's background. Anyway, he bumps into Bella Emberg from Russ Abbott.
I was about to say that.
What, about Bella Emberg?
Yes. I have the Wikipedia page up for her.
Great. And she gives him a clue.
Her.
And there is Jackie, who's particularly sexy. In this. And of course, well, the scene with the tumble dryers does remind me of the old Levi 501s advert, which would have been appropriate if we had this last week, because it was our 501 last week. Anyway, I love the way he, in the background, he tells the story the opposite of what actually happened, which is quite amusing, because he sort of made out that he's flirting with Jackie, and it was exactly the opposite way around. But he manages to get into her flat and sort of fix her washing machine and find out a little bit about Rose, but not quite enough. And then it's time for Big Nose Woman. Just as she's falling in love with Quiet Chap to be become absorbed.
Mr. Skinner.
Yeah, whatever.
And he had a first name.
They were going to go on a date, weren't they?
They never named his first name. It's only in the credits.
Okay. Anyway. Where did I get up to? Oh, yeah. So he keeps on. He goes back to Jackie's flat, and Jackie has a bit of a perv. Whether we get camera angles of Elton in various different positions. And then she asks him to take it. Oh, yeah, she deliberately pours wine down his front.
Twice.
Yeah, I like that.
In order to get him to take his shirt off. So he does that and he sort of freshens himself up and comes out. But unfortunately, Rose has decided to phone Jackie. This must have been from a different... Unless it's just after they've left the Hoyks episode, which we don't see. And she's called Jackie and she's been put off her
master.
Randy plans. Yes?
We don't know necessarily when Rose is calling from because it's a...
Science fiction fantasy TV show?
Yes.
Well, anyway, she calls
it doesn't have to be immediately after the Hoyks.
So he... So that's the point in which he realises he's in love with Ursula. But he's still on a mission, so he goes back to see Jackie. But Jackie, because he was going to buy a pizza, wasn't he, for her? And Jackie thinks, I'll pay for it. I'll slip a tenner into his wallet and finds a picture of Rose in his pocket. And that's the end of that particular plan.
Master.
Yes, Kirby?
Yeah, he buys two pizzas, and those are the tiniest pizzas I've ever seen. And that pizza place.
They're normal size for us.
Yeah, they're pizza-sized
pizzas. I didn't actually see the pizza.
But they're normal size for us in the UK.
Yeah, but are they not pizzas for one?
Yeah, they're called personal size pizzas. Yeah.
You know. Anyway, that pizza company is the same one that's around the corner from the Torchwood entrance. It's actually, I think, located approximately in the Torchwood universe. It's located approximately where Ianto's shrine is.
Anyway, away from the 20 megabyte pizza podcast, which would have been appropriate when Alicia was on the show.
Pizza!
Yeah. We also saw the same pizza box in Dalek for the first time. Same pizza company.
Great.
Well, they must keep those boxes in the props room.
Yes. They must do.
Quick, get the normal
anyway, so he falls out with Jackie, which again annoys Kennedy, who decides that Skinner's going to be his next meal. But Ursula and Elton leave, and then Ursula realises she's left something behind and goes back, and Kennedy's sort of in mid-absorption and is hiding behind a newspaper. But you can still hear the voice of who was it? Was it Skinner's voice or was it Big Nose Lady's voice? I can't remember.
Mr. Skinner's voice.
Yeah. And he takes the newspaper down, and it's suddenly gone from a posh sort of oik to a very very northern,
weird-looking
Shrek-style monster. And so on his body, rather creepily, of lots of faces, including most recently Skinner.
Who's on his bum? Is it Mr. Skinner who's on his bum?
No, it's lovely Bliss is on his bum.
Yeah, Bliss is on his bum.
Yeah. Ironic, really, that the prettiest member of the cast ends up on his bum and we don't get to see again. Anyway, so there's a bit of a scene where they argue with him, and then... he grabs Ursula's arm after she threatens him with his biff stick, but he gets the better of her and absorbs her, much to obviously Elton's disgust and horror, because she loves her. He loves her. What got me is that she got absorbed, and so did the glasses. So she's got a pair of glasses on.
But the glasses are remarkably untouched by the green stuff.
I would have thought they would dig in a little bit, you know. His body a little bit as he walks around.
Very uncomfortable. Digest, yeah.
He might have gone into his spleen or something. Very, very dangerous for an absorber off. Anyway, he's still after the doctor, though, because he wants to taste a bit of the doctor's time lordiness. So he basically runs around chasing after Elton, wearing this very weird sort of pair of budgie smugglers.
Master?
She was designed by the Blue Peter Kid, remember?
Yes.
and go and watch the YouTube video that I posted a link to by the kid who's no longer a kid, where he talks about the entire experience.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, Can I go back just a bit to where the Absorbaloff reveals himself?
Yeah.
I want to point out the newspaper that he's reading.
Mm-hmm.
It's the Daily Telegraph. It has a lead headline.
Yeah.
It says Saxon leads polls with 64%.
Ah, I do love these little tidbits that you can pick up on later dates.
Yeah. And in fact, when they were doing the commentary, one of the producers was there and the director, both were being very secretive about that. And they said, you know, that headline means something, but you can't find out yet. Because they did this way before.
Thank you, Kirby. Anyway, I'm just going to open up a video feeder. You'll hear some audio from a few seconds ago until I actually mute it back down again, because this is the only way I can see the comments coming through.
But you can't find out yet.
There we go. That was click quick, wasn't it? Right then, so we got Lillian Robbins says, I miss magic. Well, I do too, but fortunately for listeners of this show, you've got 501 episodes of which he's in some of, sometimes
Yay,
in the description. And sometimes he's an actual sound. And the videos that are still on the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast Facebook group, which you can join, also incorporate magic, especially a very famous one where the chair falls on him, which I think we referred to, didn't we, in episode 500. So,
yeah. I've got some pictures of us recording with him on my lap.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah, post them. Post them.
Yeah, I will.
I love the picture of him with K9.
Yeah, but
that's my favourite, that one.
That's my Deb's favourite one. She loves that picture. Lady Robin also says, what was that you were showing us? Sorry, my fly's undone. I don't know what I was showing. Oh, it was my COVID test, my rapid flow COVID test. That's what I was showing. Terry Miles. Hi, everybody. Kirsty Bissett. A Wikipedia page, not surprised. They are probably 50 of them. That's probably in relation to something we were talking about half an hour ago. So sorry about that, Kirsty. And then she says, I long to be seduced by Jackie. A few of us do, but I think she's slightly older than she was when this story was done. And then she says,
she's still a fine woman.
What, Kirsty or Jackie?
Oh.
Kirsty says, he said it was supposed to be way bigger. What, the TARDIS or... Or my fly's undone again. Right.
The Absorbaloff, probably.
The Absorbaloff was supposed to be the size of a truck.
Okay. Anyway, so...
That would have made it more interesting.
So, yeah, so Elton gets chased by the Absorbaloff and tells him all about himself, really, before he plans to absorb Elton. But the TARDIS arrives just in the nick of time.
To tell him off for stalking.
Yeah. And of course, the doctor's there. You think initially he's there to sort of tell the Absorbaloff off, but no, he's there to warn Elton that he's just about to get told off by Rose upsetting her mummy. But then, yeah. And there's a scene where.
How did they know where to find him and what he looked like?
Science fiction, fantasy TV show, etc. They'd know what he looked like, wouldn't they? Because Jackie's met him. They could have nipped back and she could have showed him a picture of him or something. And then nipped over there to see Elton himself. Anyway, the Absorbaloff says, well, I'm going to absorb this chap. And the doctor says, yep, go on him. And... And then he breaks the stick. He's given the stick, which isn't actually a fist. It's like a clenched hand, isn't it? Two sort of fists together, which open up to do the absorbing. Then he breaks it, which puts pay to the Absorbaloff, who sort of ends up as a splat. What I forgot to mention was there's a very amusing conversation in which the doctor asks, if he's from Ratsukoriko Philopatorius, and he said, no, I'm from the next door planet. What's that called? Clum. So that's quite amusing. Typical RTD.
I love that line.
Yeah, RTD.
That's why it was my quote, because I love that bit. Clum.
But anyway, he ends up as a looks like a pile of cement, actually, which is rather appropriate considering what happens next. Of course, the Doctor uses his magic wand, and it's actually referred to as a magic wand by Elton.
They finally said it.
Yeah. And
magic wand.
Rather inappropriately, well, we'll find out later what it inappropriately does, because at this point, Elton is given the memory back of his mother's death, that the doctor couldn't save her.
Faster.
She'd been attacked by a shadow creature. Was it the shadow creature that apparently Stephen Moffat created? But
that's what I think it is, that it's one of the... oh, what are those things called?
Oh, Vasta Narada. But
Vasta Narada, yes.
Did I say that while Isla was out of the room?
Yes, she's not here.
Good. Yeah, but I must say, for this whole episode, that is the scariest moment, the thought that there is this shadow creature that kills people.
Yeah, that's the scariest bit of the whole thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
But it was interesting, I always thought until I watched that the shadow creature, which was obviously eventually became, I would think, the Vasta Narada, was an original idea by Stephen Moffat. But I went to RTD, fed him the idea through this, and then because he's the showrunner, said, "Hey, I've mentioned this shadow creature, Stephen. You know, let's bring him into this story." So fans must have said, "Oh, that was the scariest moment," like you did, Mary.
Yeah.
Therefore, the Vasta Narada were born. Well, not born, created. So anyway, then of course the
Vasta Narada eat to the bone, whereas his mother was just laying there dead. So
I know. That's just a tweak to the idea, isn't it? But anyway, the doctor sonics one of the pavers and brings back the face of Ursula, who then continues a relationship.
My secondary quote was going to be, "Elton, fetch a spade."
Anyway, rather inappropriately, continues a relationship with a face on a slab. Very strange, very fun. But this story was meant to be lighthearted. It was the first ever Dr. Light story. And it's just a bit of fun. And I think you can't take it as anything other than that. For me, it is fun. It's a great deal of fun. I love the character of Elton. I love the way they tell the story via him doing the video diary or whatever it was supposed to be, the video vidcast or something like that. Love the cast. I said vidcast. That led me into the word cast. I've already mentioned Catherine Drysdale, who should have been used more. And all in all, it's just a really good, fun little story, which I thoroughly enjoy every time I see it. So I'm not going to say any more about it, and I'll be interested to hear what Debbie Melrose thinks.
I have watched this one now probably 3 or 4 times, and I am sorry to say I still don't enjoy this one. I don't understand why. I do understand they wanted to try new things, but it doesn't work in the middle of such a sumptuous season. And then this comes in and just, for me, it feels like it falls flat. And yes, it's nice to understand the repercussions of being your life being involved with the doctor. And, you know, I mean, this goes on from the discussion with Sarah Jane about what happens when you leave us behind and how worried Rose gets about that. But this is people whose lives have been hit by the doctor. And I just find it falls flat for me as a story. I don't enjoy it. And normally I love Peter Kay in most anything he does. But I just didn't feel him as the bad guy in this. It was so pantomime. But I understand that is, you know, it's Doctor Who, you know, monsters, people in rubber suits. I mean, I have such fond memories of all the, like, the, you know, William Hartnell and everybody in the suits and the zombie and things like that, you know, just wonderful suited monsters. But I just didn't, I've tried to like this because people say, oh, but it's great. You know, you've got the character, you've got a different way of presenting the story. The music's different as well. And it's just, yeah, the only real sort of moment for me is, as we've discussed this a bit, when you want to find out more about what killed his mum. The Zorbaloff is almost by the by, because when the doctor stood over her body and then goes, it's like, well, I'd rather hear that story. But no, we've got this bit. And I'm sorry, I'm just sort of fiddling for something really good to say for me. But for this one, this is just, unfortunately, one that just falls by the wayside for me. And I really, they can't seem to decide if it's meant to be comedic, if it's meant to be deadly serious, if it's, you know, it just doesn't seem to find its flow, like unlike some of the other previous episodes that have just been absolutely sublime storytelling. So yeah, unfortunately for me, this is one that I will voluntarily watch unless we have to.
But if I can interject before you move on to Kirby, Debbie, you said you liked the music in this. Something that I read about is that Murray Gold, in order to save time, recycled a lot of the music that was used from previous episodes. There is no original music in this one.
I know, but it's the way it's put together.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's put together. It's stitched together and it doesn't flow. It doesn't flow properly. The one minute it's happy, the next minute it's down, the next minute it's up, and it doesn't seem to flow in together at all.
Yeah.
And I the Doctor Who music is amazing. It got better and better. The orchestration, everything. It just this season, with David Tennant, the music just went, you know, stratospheric. There were concerts, everything. This is when the concerts really took off, and you know, the big. Proms, Doctor Who proms and things like that. And but yeah, I just felt the main reason I love the music in this episode is because I am a huge fan of the Electric Light Orchestra.
Yeah, me too. Mm-hmm. That deserves a ding, but the bell is disappeared.
So that is the big plus in this one for me, is the yellow.
Good. Thank you. All right, Kirby, what did you think?
The yellow white.
What?
Sorry, I have to have my puns. Anyway,
very good.
Apparently, we watched completely different stories because I absolutely adore this one, which I've never been quiet about the fact that this is an absolute favorite. I love the way that it is basically, what was that?
Adam's getting messages.
That it parodies the fandom where we get together because of Doctor Who and then go off and do different things which have nothing to do with Doctor Who. Which was my life before COVID, because I was always doing things with the local Doctor Who people. I like seeing the events that occurred from a different viewpoint. We, of course, we get that again with Turn Left, but it's slightly more sinister.
Turn Left's amazing.
Yes. I think they recycled some of the same footage, didn't they? It's the whole, all the scenes with Jackie and Elton are just hilarious. Yeah, the Vashta Narada thing is kind of weird in there, but you've got it's his motivation for being interested in the Doctor in the first place. I can live with it, but I just love this one. And yeah, to me, I think a lot of people go Marmite because of that, the last joke, but it sounds like you don't like it, that Debbie doesn't like it for more than just the last joke. But most people just love it until they get that last joke.
And they go,
I'm not biased because of the last joke. The last joke was just the icing on the cake. Why I don't like it. I'm allowed to not like it. Sorry.
Yes, yeah. Of course you are.
Indeed.
Absolutely.
I've never been shy of saying how much I don't like this.
And I've never been shy of saying that. for the Marmite part, I love it.
Thank you, Kirby. Okay, everybody. Stand by. Mary.
Well, actually, this is a very interesting approach to a Doctor Who story. It's the Doctor as seen through the eyes of fans, and how fandom leads to friendships and relationships, which any of us who have belonged to any of these kind of groups have lived through, as Kirby did, and as I do with every Doctor Who convention in Chicago every year. Davies always wanted to write a story about the fandom because he was a big fan and he saw that play out. So this is kind of his homage to Doctor Who fandom. And I think the performances of Camille Kadoorie and Mark Warren, they're the standouts in this. Yes. And the scenes of them in the laundromat and her apartment, to me, are just sparkle in the middle of this, otherwise kind of forgettable story. But let me sum up my reactions to the episodes that I missed: School Reunion, Tooth and Claw, Idiot's Lantern. In fact, let me summarize the whole second series, including this story and the next. A band comes out with a groundbreaking smash hit album. And people are thrilled and they want more. And then out comes the second album. Safe, careful to not offend or alienate anyone. Lots of references to the earlier, more successful part of the first album. More lighthearted. And after a stunning first effort, this season is the second album or second movie, as we've seen that play out that way too. Of course, in the case of Star Trek, that would probably be the first movie. We have Rose as our carryover from the first successful season. She and the Doc treat all this time travel adventure stuff with humor and a touch of disdain. They're the cozy couple now. She isn't our surrogate anymore, so we feel kind of left out of the party. The monsters in this season are light. They're insubstantial, mostly non-threatening to the human race in general, except maybe the throwback Cybermen, but they were already, an established monster. The successes of the past, Sarah Jane, K-9, visual reminders of past episodes, as we saw, in this one, definitely, the better stories, the Nestine, the Sycorax, the Slitheen, they're all brought out to remind us of why we enjoyed Doctor Who's return. And I'd say the Tooth and Claw does stand a little above these stories, but we still feel left out of the Doctor and Rose twosome, and we're still reminded of past successes. I don't see any new groundbreaking things, new real good experimental things, except maybe this being, like I said, Davy's tribute to fandom. There's nothing that original or that exciting going on this whole season, because I think that the success of the first season caught them off guard, and then being on on demand now, like, okay, come up with a second season. All they can do this whole season that includes the next story, is to just kind of come up with whatever they can to remind us how the first season was so good. Mm-hmm. So those are my thoughts, as Alan would say.
Thank you, Mary. Right then, we're going to move on to feedback in the usual order, but if I run out of time, I'm going to be relying on you guys to carry on while I'm in the other room watching the build up to the match. Kirby, you'll need a pen and paper, possibly, just be prepared for some instructions on how to continue the show to its end. However, for the moment,
recording, there's just going to be silence.
No, not with, I'm going to leave it recording.
In 20 minutes. I'm by the way,
hello, Adam.
What? Oh my God, it's Kirsty!
How are you, Adam?
Kirsty.
Voice anywhere.
Kirsty.
You're not supposed to say that. I'm working on my voice. You're supposed to say, "Oh, that sounded different." Thanks.
It is different, my darling, because I've been listening to old episodes when you were Ian, and it was very, very butch, and now it's very, very Kirsty. Kirsty.
Never heard of him.
Kirsty. Oh,
I knew it was you because your picture suddenly showed up on my...
well, it did say Kirsty joined, but I thought that meant you joined the little comment feed. So, no, I'm delighted. Right, that's what better do an introduction. Kirsty Bissett.
Oh, I didn't have my page up. Can you give me a lead in? Hang on, give me a second.
Give you a long lead in, actually, longer than most people get.
Okay, another introduction, please. We'll just take it.
Another introduction?
Okay, yeah.
Okay. And Kirsty Bissett.
And there I was, the ultimate step five,
The perfect infiltration. Target, Jackie Tyler.
No, I want actually a quote from the episode, not a quote from your actual thoughts.
No, it's a quote from the show as well.
Yes, it's lovely to hear from you, Kirsty.
It's lovely to be heard from.
But as Mary, we're just about to move on to feedback, but it gives you time to talk about what you thought of Love and Monsters.
I love it. And
yay!
I watched it with the commentary on, and partway through, I'm like, if things didn't get hectic around here, I was totally prepared to actually sit down and watch it again without the commentary, just because I wanted to watch it again, because it is, it's like I already said, for us fans, it means something different, I think. For a lot of us fans. A lot of us fans, it means a dirty joke at the end. But, no, the performances in there are great, as Mary was saying. And even listening to the commentary and hearing the director talk about how the shots are set up and how they decorated things. It's just the amount of work that went into this attempt at tricking their way through the schedule and getting more Who for less time. It's fabulous. It's a fabulous thing. And I love it. And plus ELO in the soundtrack. It's, you know,
yes.
I'm like, it's really great. And I really do love the Jackie Tyler character, and especially that miniskirt at the end, but never mind.
I like that too.
Yes. Camille is fantastic because she throws herself right into that, and it doesn't break either, because that's the neat thing about Jackie, is she's this abrasive kind of mum who's really kind of embarrassing and stuff, but then you get the scene in the courtyard with the pizza, and that's totally Jackie too, and it's just fantastic. I just feel so sorry for him in that moment, and that's perfect, because you kind of take Jackie's point, and you're like, no, sit down and listen to him. Mm. Something happened with him and the doctor in his past. He's trying to figure it out. It's all innocent. And to be engaged on what's a Dr. Light episode to that degree, I think speaks volumes about the performances in it and just how well it's put together. And I think on the commentary they said, we just loved seeing the Rushes come in, because of course they were working on Possible Planet, Satan Pit, and yes. Two entirely different productions.
Yeah.
And it's just, and I did, when you watch it with the commentary and you kind of watch it in the background, you're like, yeah, this is really actually phenomenal. It's good. I love it.
Thank you, Kirsty. Right then.
Thank you, Kirsty.
And now
I was going to going down in his little database. Kirsty agrees with Kirby. That's moment in history.
Oh, that's not going to happen very often.
It happens more than you think.
Right then. Right, before we move on to the main section of feedback, now, last week, the last episode, 501, it was a very, very special episode. And I haven't had anybody make any comments about the very, very special part of the very, very special episode. So I was a little bit appalled, because it actually moved me to a lump in my throat when this particular thing arrived in my inbox and my email. And nobody has been the slightest bit impressed by it. And where it relates to you a little bit, Kirsty, were you the slightest bit impressed by the special content of episode 501?
I haven't listened to 501. Sorry.
That rather points me to the fact that I don't think any of you have listened to 501, have you?
No.
So that rather worries me a little bit, that not only have none of you listened to episode 501, because I did drop heavy hint that it might be worth listening to. None of the listeners have listened to episode.
I have a podcast to go listen to. I'll be right back.
Yeah.
you were going on to the Facebook group complaining about people not.
Well, I was very, very, I was very kind to everybody.
You've got about 15 minutes.
What?
You've got 15 minutes.
Yeah, thank you for that.
Yeah, 15 minutes.
I'm going to try and leave it in your capable hands for the first time ever. I said capable, didn't I? What's the matter with me?
Right,
I don't know how I'm going to run the podcast remotely.
You don't have to run the podcast. It is at the I was very kind. I put it at the very beginning of the episode. The very beginning. And nobody can even be bothered to listen to the very beginning of 501, which is actually my favourite bits of the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast, period, ever. And none of you lot could be bothered to listen to it.
In my defence, I have had a kitchen flood, and I was fired from my job of 17 years.
Oh, dear. Reese, is that in it?
So,
fair dinkum, yeah. Cobber. Fair dinkum. Yeah, it's in his book.
No. What the heck are you doing?
What am I doing? I was just talking to Reese. You all right, Reese? Yeah, fair dinkum, mate. Yeah?
Reese.
Right then, where did I get up to? I was going to do...
I thought you were being cheeky to me.
you're not Australian.
I'm a little Australian.
Brandon Moore says, sorry I'm late, I had to go to the loo and I have to use the pub on the corner. Is that to nip over to see what the score is? That'd be later. Right then, Kirby, I suppose you'd better get on with the feedback while I moan and grumble to myself about the people that couldn't be bothered to listen to the start of episode 501.
I will go and listen to it when we're done, okay?
I'll go listen to it last week.
Yeah, okay. I need to refresh the page. Hey,
Brandon Moore says, I would have listened to 501, but I got a paper cut from Reese's Book of Excuses. And I just happened to have found my bell.
That's excellent.
Saved by the bell.
Kirby, you have a job to do.
Can I start the...
Yes, please do. Yes.
Would you hurry up and start the feedback? The man's going to leave.
Yes. So Robert Wins Jr. says, Scooby who? And then with a thumbs down for some reason.
Ooh, naughty.
Terry Miles says, why is that then? And Neil James, Love and Monsters. I've heard fans, in quotation marks, call this story awful, embarrassing, and controversial. Well, I call it TV gold.
Me.
I don't like it.
Well, you've been out for on the surface, it may appear like a silly, pointless filler episode, but look closer and you'll find an intelligent and layered script which sprints along and handles its shifts in tone with skilled direction and a perfect cast. I love Jackie, and she absolutely shines in every scene she's in. What an incredible performance from Camille. Mark Warren as Elton is great as our narrator, and he, along with all the other members of Linda, are hugely likable. There's music, mystery, romance, drama, horror, and comedy. Yes, I think this is one of the funniest Doctor Who stories ever produced. People talk about Peter Kay hamming it up, but I actually think he's quite reserved. Let's not forget Richard Briers in Paradise Towers.
Yes, indeed.
I understand that Love and Monsters isn't everyone's cup of tea, but for me it serves as a welcome break from the current Doc and Rose relationship, which is just a bit too irritating at this stage.
I agree.
You wouldn't want many eps like this, but as a one-off, I think it's cracking. 4 stars out of 5.
Excellent.
Robert Wins Jr. says to Neil, well, enjoy your life as a face on a paving stone. And I posted the picture of Victor Kennedy and Biff.
Yeah.
And Robert Wins Jr. has Kermit the Frog drawing a K in response to that. Okay.
I think he feels the same way about it that I do.
Ah, yes. I think he's just about to say so, Deb.
Yes. Robert Wins Jr., my review of Love and Monsters. Never liked this one since the day it aired. I believe all this was in Elton's mind. Starts out as Scooby Who and goes downhill from there. The Absorbaluff should be a monster in the Sarah Jane Adventures or Torchwood. No, it doesn't belong in Torchwood. Feels like it should be a music video for ELO, which was the only best part of this. You can't shine up this turd. even though the Doctor isn't human, there's no way he's going to let someone spend the rest of their life as a paving stone. Torchwood is mentioned as its files were messed up by a bad wolf virus. This is the start of the Doctor Companion Light episodes. Later on in Time Crash, the Fifth Doctor mentioned the Linda Group in that Children in Need special. My rating is 1 out of 5.
Thank you.
He also reminds us that the Absorbaloft was designed by a 9-year-old child who won a Blue Peter competition.
Yeah.
Gee, did anyone know? So I posted a link to that 9-year-old child's...
Yeah, thank you.
9-year-old child YouTube about the whole thing.
Yeah, thank you, Kobe.
Mr. M. Here we are, complete strangers, and I'm flashing you Menickers. Again, I don't have time to record audio feedback today. Too busy watching the tennis. Ah. Love and Monsters by Russell T. Davis. This is a story that many find a monstrosity rather than finding much to love about it. As for me, however, I love this story. I love Elton. I love the straight-to-camera stuff. I love the blue bucket and the not blue bucket. I love the Scooby-Doo chase. I love the way moments from the past two series are used to build up a more complex world for the series. This story may be Dr. Light and low budget, but it opens the doors of the Hooniverse wide, showing the effects the Doctor's past adventures have had on everyday folk. I love the use of ELO and Mr. Blue Sky. I love the internet going into meltdown. I love Linda. I love musical Linda. I love Peter Kay's performance as Mr. Kennedy. I love the eczema.
Yeah, forgot about the eczema. That would have been my quote.
I love the way Elton puts his hand up to talk to Mr. Kennedy. I love that this is the only story to feature a reference to all three series story arcs.
Yeah.
I love every single moment with Jackie in this episode. Camille Corduri is amazing. And I love her speech about being left behind. Jackie Tyler is made of steel. Oh, no, wait. That was the parallel version. Anyway, I love Ursula standing up to Mr. Kitty, and then we come to the Absorbaloft. I like it. Peter Kay's performance is not too bad. I think it's nowhere near as good as his performance as Victor, but that's part of the problem. Taken in isolation, I think it's all right. The pants are rubbish, though. Yeah, they are. I love the simple way the villain is defeated. I could have done without the backstory of an alien shadow killing Elton's mom, but I don't mind it. Let's not mention the paving slab. There are some Doctor Who stories I have never rewatched. Orphan 55.
Jesus.
The Rebel Flesh, Almost People, Battle of Rancid Oak Koalas. Oh, that one. Okay. There are some stories I've seen 5, 6, 7 times. Blank, Silence in the Library, Day of the Doctor. I've probably seen this story more than any other. It's brilliant, good, lighthearted fun, and I probably watch this at least twice a year, if not more. It is, as RTD would say, marvelous. If you think any different, you're wrong. 9 out of 10.
Wrong.
The next is it a 9 out of 10? I would think you would have given it a 10.
Mm.
Next time. Oh, no, not you too, Bob.
It's interesting, the three stories he mentioned that he would watch were all, Stephen Moffat stories. That's it then, isn't it? Moving on to the next bit. Well, we've still got a bit of time left before I have to move into the other room and absorb some Stella Artois. I beg your pardon?
You can miss a little bit of your sport.
Well, it starts at 8, but I want to see some of the build-up, you know? Get into the absorb, open up my bottle of Stella, because Debbie might be aware of this. When you open up a bottle of Stella, that smell you get of the Stella, it's almost hypnotising. You don't get that from a can.
Having poured draft Stella for years, I don't agree so much.
No, it doesn't smell the same, but when you open up a bottle... Anyway, Deb, don't forget, I'm right. We have this, hopefully it's loud enough. And hopefully it's going to play. Oh no. Not again.
You should be used to this by now.
No, it's not that. It's just that the computer fooled me into thinking I didn't have to download it to play it. No.
You always have to download it.
No, it didn't. It didn't come up with the option until I clicked on it. And then, download.
Computer?
Did you say future?
Can you add it in later?
No, it should play all right. But if it is quiet, indeed, we may have to add it in later. But my computer's quite busy.
I will guarantee that that all of the presenters would listen to the podcast this time.
Well, sorry, after the efforts
don't
of a
anything, Kirby.
after the efforts of a mysterious person who inputted one of the best moments ever into last week's show, I doubt it.
Well, good evening, 20 Megabytes. Anthony here. It's just come to 7 o'clock on Saturday night, sitting here with a nice glass of white Rioja, which I must admit is going down an absolute treat. Just been doing the ironing, and the second half I watched Dark Materials, but the first bit I watched Love of Monsters. Now, three quarters of this I think is actually a very, very good story. Why? Well, it's actually because it's about the Doctor, but it's about people looking for the Doctor and trying to find the Doctor. And I did wonder, that little group, whether Clive, who appeared in Rose, was actually one of these group. Well, he had been part of this group until he got done in. But you see, this is about people trying to find out, trying to tell the Doctor, because who is the Doctor? You know, we don't know. You know, he is someone who keeps cropping up in history. And
on BBC One.
They only see this little group, only ever see the David Tennant face, the 10th Doctor. But, you know, he's cropped up, he's gone across time and space. And who is he? And I think that's the interesting thing, because there are people out there who will wonder things like this, you know, trying to understand what this person is, what the motivation is, what it is they're trying to achieve. And I think you actually learn a lot about the Doctor from seeing, you know, what they find out about him, you know, what they see about him. I mean, even his relationship with Jackie is interesting, you know, the way he's saying, you know, the companion goes off, but somebody gets left behind. I mean, it's like you think Rory's dad is the same, isn't it? You know, because, you know, he stays behind towards the plants, doesn't he? But, you know, this is looking at it from the point of view of people who are left behind by the Doctor. You know, there's a lot. Yeah, he does have a lot, not blood on his hands. That's the wrong phrase. But he's got there's a lot of things he's made happen. He's affected so many people's lives. I think that's why this story is looking at those people. And, you know, the bit with Elton, where you find out at the end what happened to Elton, why the Doctor was there. You know, did the Doctor kill his mother? Well, probably not. He didn't actually kill his mother, but you could say in a way he was the cause of his mother's death. And this is the impact the Doctor has on people's lives. You know, he comes in and he changes so much. And then, you know, he can just move on, can't he? So I think that's why three quarters of this was a good story. You know, with people all have their own agenda, all their own intentions, all their own thoughts about why they wanted to do this. And when Mr. Kennedy came on the first along, you know, you think, he's got the same thoughts. You know, he's trying to find out who this man is. Three quarters of it, I said, was a good story. A quarter of it was just utter, oh my God, it was embarrassing. I mean, that it's the sort of story that really does give Doctor Who...
Oh, sorry, I accidentally knocked the mouse.
...that name. Because I'm sorry, it just was dreadful. You know, I mean, the concept was just bad from the word go. And then seeing this absorb a love... And he's just swallowing people up, and it's just, I'm sorry, it just was. I'm trying to, you know, make it the Twin Planets of Arena. I'm not even going to try and say it, the planet's name. But Clon, that's a good one. But it's, this is the sort of story that really does make you cringe, or at least a quarter of it was. So, yeah, I just, it could have been so much better. It really, really could have been so much better. Shame. It's a wasted one. And it's interesting as well, Jackie, the way, you know, she's got that serious hot throat, hasn't she? I mean, by God, I thought he was going to, yeah, let's not go there anymore, but hey-ho. You know, he was going to, you know, well, blimey, you got Jackie and Isabel as well. You know, lucky man, by God, two on the go at the same time. She wonder where his energy from. Anyway, enough of that. And, of course, the music. Oh, busting, isn't it? Great Broomy Band, DLO. Oh, you know, in my kickball days, Birmingham used to actually run out to Mr. Blue Sky. And Dawn, when she was in a thing called Rock Choir, which exactly as it sounds, it's a choir singing rock. They used to do Mr. Blue Sky. They do all the actions with them. There's a whole series of actions they do with this. And it was great. I mean, what a great, great bit of music that was. But yeah, it's a shame. This story could have been so good. But it wasn't. And it's going to be remembered for... Peter Kay, that bloody paving slab. Be seeing you.
Anyway, you're wrong, Andy, so don't worry about it. It's fine.
Yeah, you're wrong. To quote Mr. M.
Yeah.
He's right.
How quiet you.
Okay, right then. Because obviously...
Debbie I used to love.
Oh, what else we got
here? It's so Marmite, this episode, and just a flip of the coin.
This really is a Marmite episode.
I'm in the wrong folder.
It is, yeah. That's good about Doctor Who.
Exactly.
It's good about it's good because it's Marmite.
Always.
Okay, right then. Okay, so I wonder if this is.
Well,
that's my time up, Alexa.
Yes, it
stop.
Is.
Well, goody.
That's not the one.
Amy fell down to the ground.
Yes. So I'm just looking through some audio files. No, sorry, I got distracted then, didn't I? Now, this is going to be tricky because I can't play these audio files the way I want to play them. It means I've got a faff. So, gosh, here we go.
Send someone something from Alan T. Butcher.
No.
I'll be back here as well.
No, I've lost me jingles. Oh, no, it's there. I thought I'd lost my oh, God. I closed the window, and do you notice it stopped Andy's feedback? And
all you're going to do is miss the national anthems. That's it.
No, that's not for another 10 minutes yet. But I want to try and get in there as quickly as possible. Ah, here we are. I've got the piece of music. So here we go.
Crazy.
Oh, I haven't downloaded it yet.
Uh-oh.
Oh, God. Here we go. Sorry, Ian.
Amy fell down to the ground.
Oh, be quiet with your Amy fell down to the ground. Jeez. All right. So, yeah.
Hello, 20 Megabyte Podcast. This is Ian Kirk.
Yay!
Hey, Ian.
Love and Monsters by Russell T. Davies. Oh, this one. Well, I will be brief. Even briefer than usual. This is the first time the idea of having the Doctor and Companion appear as minor characters in a story, so that two stories could be filmed at the same time. Well, it worked well in Blink. Peter Kay was originally offered the role of Elton, but preferred to play the villain.
That's true.
Jackie Tyler gets a toy boy. I expect she wanted one ever since she first heard of them. There's football on the TV later.
Is there?
Bye for now.
That is brilliant.
Yes, thank you very much, Ian. Right then, so I have sent out some text. One went to Mary and one went to Debbie, but I can't remember which one's which. But I think that Mary got the one that needs to be read next.
And that one's from Ellen T. Butcher. Is that what
you
want? Oh,
bum. Debbie got the one that needs to be read next.
So you're ready to take over when he leaves then, Kirby?
I think it's probably just as well.
This Doctor Light episode is set in London. Elton Pope, played by Mark Warren, joins a group of people called Linda who have an interest in the Doctor and a blue police box. They are a mixture of people, and the group is joined by Victor Kennedy, played by the comedian Peter Kay, who takes over the group. He is an alien who wants to meet the Doctor and absorb his physical body and knowledge. There's that Torchwood mention again. Bad Wolf gets a mention as well.
Yes.
The story is from Elton's point of view. He befriends Rose's mum. Did he even look at Jackie's knickers?
What? Oh, yes, of course.
Victor is an alien, an Absorbaloff, which was designed by William Grantham, the winner of a Blue Peter competition, to design a Doctor Who monster. William wanted his monster to be the size of a double-decker bus, but the BBC cut it down to human size. We are in two minds over this one. While it strained into offensive humour, bit of a love loath, Peter Kay as the Absorbaloff was funny, but still reminded me too much of Brian Potter and Max in Phoenix Nights. Next up, Scribble No Sorry, Fear Her. Stay safe and well, everybody. Linda and Terry Miles.
Yeah, well done, Debbie. Now then, Master. What?
Quickly, before you disappear.
I'm not disappearing yet. Carry on.
I want to confirm that our next recording will be for Fear Her and will be on the 1st of August.
At the moment. That is the date that we've got scheduled in to my busy schedule.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. Okay, right then. Actually, I don't really want to make you anybody suffer to have to listen to this podcast, of all things. This will explain what was at the beginning of 501.
Hello. The Sixth Doctor here, in the form of Colin Baker, sending greetings to the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast, which is apparently reaching its 500th edition. Well, I suppose the reason it's reaching its 500th edition is because A, it's about Doctor Who, which is extremely popular, and B, it's an extremely well-organized podcast by Adam Pearson, whom I know personally, because I've appeared at a convention of his in 2019 on the Isle of Wight, which was extremely well-run. So the podcast is extremely well-run, too. So congratulations to Adam Pearson. Congratulations to the 20-megabyte Doctor Who podcast. And keep listening, as they say. Best wishes from the Sixth Doctor. Old Sixie to you.
You can hear it properly if you listen to 501, by the way.
Wow.
Oh, it was on a podcast.
Wow.
Unbelievable, you lot are, I tell you. Don't know
where. That was amazing.
We should put an advert out somewhere for podcast co-presenters. Right then. Debbie. Sorry, Mary, you have some words from the illustrious counsellor, Alan
T. I do, from the wordsmith. Okay, he says, Elton's John Smith encounter, or paving the way to a new relationship. Dear 20 megabyters, Love and Monsters is, of course, a closely studied parable of the joys, creativity, and pitfalls of fannish interactions. The development of Linda from a group that coalesces from common interests to shared creativity to mutual enjoyment and respectful confidence building are a common experience in fandoms. How true, Ellen. However, overbearing gatekeeper attitudes from some fans are genuinely toxic to such wholesome and beneficial activities. As shown, this can manifest as what appears to be a focusing of minds to achieve what may seem a positive improvement initially. However, the long-term prognosis of absorbing all efforts into a singular directive can be catastrophic and lead to the reduction in support and attendance and, at worst, complete liquidation of the group. It should be noted that whilst some might say that setting up a character to have a paving stone as a romantic interest is a little bit in poor taste, in fact, diversity should be celebrated, and this is not the first silicon-based life form in Doctor Who. Ursula must live. We also learn that Raxacor Cophalopatorius...
Hey!
What? Probably named before the nearest planet to it on the basis that they had run out of letters when Clum gained such attention. All in all, Love and Monsters is a nicely put together Dr. Light episode, which employs the effective method of placing the Doctor as central to the narrative in order to lessen the effect of having no Doctor present for the vast majority of the episode. The characters are all very distinctive and well-drawn in the limited time available, and this is how the extra time afforded to the writer with an absent central cast. The guest cast all give a creditably earnest performance. There has been a surprising amount of criticism for what is a pretty solid story, and this probably comes from the facts that it was the first Dr. Light story in the recent era, and was therefore a bit of a shock to the normal format, and that gatekeeper fans and deniers of the gatekeeper problems were uncomfortable with the cutting satirical content. However, it must be good that the show can tackle subject matters so close to the life of its own supporters and do so with honest nod insight. This story is perhaps 3.5 minutes too short, as who would not have time for another song?
Yes.
Stop Doctor Who and the Chloe Weber of Fear, or scribble sort of rhymes with drivel. Those are my thoughts, Alan T. Butcher.
Brilliant as ever. Right then.
I wonder what he thinks.
Let's see, there might be anything coming through on the feed. We've got Brandon explains his 9 out of 10 for the paving, because of the paving slab. That deducted a point. And Ian Kirk said, the paving slab has left some fans stony-faced. So, I'm going to go off into the other room.
Master.
I nearly finished the show.
I just posted on your little comment about listening to 501. I have made a comment saying, please, please, please go and listen to the beginning of podcast 501 for a wonderful surprise about our having reached the milestone of 500 episodes. I included a link to episode 501. So do you forgive me yet?
I put a link to episode 501. I told people to listen to it. I don't want people just to listen to the first 2 minutes.
The
idea is listen to the whole blimmin' episode. But yes, that's fine, Kirby. Thank you.
We live the episodes, recording them.
Not always.
I don't expect you to add stuff.
I do put other things in them.
There's a surprise or that there's been something added, and then we would dive in and listen.
Well, yeah. I do put different things, just little tidbits into the actual episodes that we don't do on the show because it's a podcast.
I think, Adam, it stems from the fact that when we started doing, you recorded live because you used to edit a lot more, and then you just decided to put out what as is without editing.
Sometimes I'd have to edit things out or something,
and that's when I drop things in.
And there's other things I might drop in the off-air stuff and things like that. But anyway, it's worth listening to the show because it is a podcast.
Might I just say, Adam, darling?
Yes, darling.
That your post was a little bit vague booking.
Well, yes. I was trying to get people to actually listen to it without being like Kirby and issuing spoilers. But before I go into the other room,
I didn't issue a spoiler.
I know you didn't issue a spoiler. What I'm saying is I was trying to get people to listen to it because obviously there was something good in it to see if they could listen to it. So, oh, that was really good, and then post about it, but nobody did. That was my point. So
people thought you were talking about episode 500, though.
They got confused, but that doesn't matter. I did say 501. Anyway, I just wanted to point out, if you get a chance to watch Loki, it is superb.
Yes.
Superb.
Yep.
Series.
Yep.
Watch it.
Yep.
I did watch a film the other day. I can't remember what it was called now. It was a sort of a time traveling film.
Expedition Back to the Future. I just finished watching it yesterday.
Oh, that's good.
It's great.
Yeah, that's really good. But there's a time-travelling film I watched on Prime, and there's a Doctor Who reference in it, but I can't remember what the bloody film's called now. It's a bit like Groundhog Day, but there's two people trapped in the groundhog loop, as you were saying, that they're almost like trapped together. It's something about perfect events. I can't remember the title or something like that. It's really, really good, and there's a Doctor Who reference in it, I think.
And there was a Doctor Who reference in Expedition Back to the Future.
Yeah. But there's also a Doctor Who reference in that film, I think. Or maybe there's another one I watched. Anyway, it's good. Robert Vince Jr. says, hi all, and then said, I made a comment that I thought Love and Monsters was worse than Orphan 55 and that he's enjoying Loki. And I'm going to go off now and hopefully enjoy the football.
don't forget, is it whoan.co.uk?
Yeah, you don't have to say that. So we have that at the beginning. If you listen to the podcast, Kirby, you hear at the beginning of every single show.
Oh,
you're getting talked off again, Kirby, honestly.
Every single show, the sponsors get mentioned in the titles. Anyway, so.
But I have to say it.
Okay. So until next time, which will be in August, and hopefully Kirsty will come back for that one. And Ben's got the right reasons for not coming on the show this week. That's because he wants to absorb the whole of the lead into the European Championships final between England and Italy. I'm now going to crack open a bottle of Stella, put my feet up, and watch the football. So until next time, bye!
Bye, everybody!
Goodbye,
Nancy
Dance.
Bye, everybody!
Bye.
Bye.
The 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast is an APV Services production sponsored by whoone.co.uk, lavazi.co.uk, and iwheroes.co.uk. We are a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the BBC. No copyright infringement intended.